Do you ever feel stuck, like you're living your life on autopilot? Are you ready to shift into high gear and reach the success you so richly deserve? Welcome to the Play Big Movement podcast. I am your host, Sharon Lecter, entrepreneur, business strategist, and best-selling author. Playing big is not about settling for good enough or being comfortable. It is about reaching your highest potential and achieving your greatest success. Join me in my Play Big movement as I interview top experts in business, money, and entrepreneurship, all ready to serve you and to help you play big, be number one in your field, live your legacy, and create maximum impact. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Play Big Movement podcast. I'm excited about my guest today. We met a few short months ago, and she just lights up the room when she walks in. And Michelle O'Neill, thank you so much for sharing your day with us.
Oh my gosh, thank you so much.
Well, you, like I, have been a huge advocate for women for over 30 years. Your specialty is helping them go, and I love this, you just shared this with me off air, from divorce to dynamite, right? And living the next best life. I love that. One of the things that I highlight in my latest book, How Money Works for Women, is that 80% of men die married, 80% of women die single. And I think that's a startling stat. But what I don't share in that, and I'm sure it's pretty high, 80% of those men are probably, a lot of them are probably on second and third marriages. So there's a, it makes it even worse for the women and female population. And my biggest drive is to get women to really create their own financial wherewithal and credit. And so many of them are left in the lurch, and you're on the front lines for that. So I would love for you to share about, you work not only with divorced women, but you work with young women. You've been a huge advocate, and you're living in the trenches with some of these women who find themselves in poverty. So talk a little bit about your passion.
Yeah, I've had a passion for helping women, especially women who are going through these pivots in their life, through divorce and after divorce, for many years. It's startling. It is shocking to know the statistics, whether it's young unmarried mothers and the statistics for the number of women who are in poverty. About one third of unmarried mothers live in poverty. And that's not counting the number of unmarried mothers that are on the struggle bus. That's the number that are in poverty. We're talking the number of unmarried mothers in poverty making about $3,000 a month. And when you think about those who are making a little more than that, but a little more than that still isn't really, getting by. And then the women who are getting divorced, who are over 50 or well over 50. And like you said, the chances of them getting remarried are so slim statistically. And about half of them live in poverty because they've, statistically speaking, they've probably lived off of the income of their husbands. And now they find themselves, out on their own with, a substandard job or substandard job skills and trying to make it on their own. And so, one of my passions has been really trying to help these women figure out a plan to make it when life has caused them to have to pivot. And maybe they've chosen to pivot, or maybe life has forced them to pivot, but either way, they have to find a way to make it. And that's really been a passion of mine.
Well, I love it. And there's also, we could talk all day about the stats, but I think one of the things that my passions are women that have been married 25 years, 30 years, looking forward to golden years with their husband, and they end up getting divorced. Or the other side of the coin is women who've been married for a long time and their husband dies and they had nothing in their own name. And so those situations, so many women are thrown into poverty, or they certainly are reduced in their level of living. And I'm sure a lot of those women are women that come to see you to get some help. So talk a little bit about that set of women.
Yeah, it's incredible to me that so many of those women have just relied on their husbands to manage the finances And they've usually raised the children and managed the home and cooked the meals and been good, dutiful wives. And they've done their jobs. They viewed their jobs as being the wife and managing the home while the husband was in charge of the money. And, you know, one of the stories that I found so impactful was when I was representing a woman. She was an elderly woman, and her husband just decided to divorce her, ran off with another woman in the community, and a younger woman, actually. And she didn't even know how to write a check. Now, these days, we write very few checks, but she didn't even know how to write a check. Now, thankfully, she was a woman that had some means, but I had to help her find a financial advisor, and we had to get out a checkbook, and we had to help her learn how to write a check because she had no idea how to even manage her own finances from a standpoint of paying her own bills. And so, you know, it's just incredible to me how many women just don't have that type of financial education. So one of the things that I try to do is to help them find the resources to gain the education, even basic financial education, just to you know, go from step A to step B, much less to learn how to invest or savings or emergency funds or stocks or bonds. You know, that's almost advanced level education from sometimes what I see.
Well, so, I mean, you see women when they are like, they're stressed out, they're fearful because their hearts are broken. They've ended a marriage and now they find themselves in financial stress. So that's at least a double whammy, if not
triple. Absolutely.
Because then they're having to deal, if they have children, they're having to deal with the stress of the children. So it puts them in really a crisis mode emotionally. And so what is your advice to somebody who's listening to this, watching and listening to this right now, and they're going, that's me. You know, what's the first step they should take?
Yeah, the first step is to get in counseling as quickly as possible, because the quicker they can move through the emotion and get to doing the business of the divorce, the better off they're going to be, because the emotion is going to paralyze them. And they're not going to be able to get to the business of the divorce. So the faster they can move through and work through that emotion, the better off they're going to be. You know, we're not going to be able to solve the facts that, you know, whatever it is that's led to the divorce. And if, you know, if the husband's run away with somebody else or whatever it is that's led to the problem, you know, divorce lawyer, the divorce scenario, we're not going to be able to solve that. So if it's an inevitability and we're not going to be able to put it back together, then we've got to work through that emotion and get on to the business of it. And the faster we can get to the business of it and start educating and learning, gaining information. A lot of times I find the women have zero information about what they even own. And the saddest situation is where we have maybe a husband who has mismanaged the estate and they have almost nothing. And maybe they have a house and not a lot of savings. And, you know, one of the worst ones was where he had spent a whole bunch of money on trips and gambling and girlfriends, and they had almost nothing. And so, you know, then you have the poverty situation and you got to start figuring some things out. So the quicker we can get to the figuring things out, the better off they're going to be.
Yeah, I think it's amazing when you see, you know, a few years ago, before I wrote Think Yours for Women, so that was, you know, 10, 12 years ago, I was in the process of thinking about writing it. And I was out for a birthday lunch for myself with my friends. There were 12 of us. And I asked them, how many of you sign your tax return without understanding what's in it? All but one raised their hands. Now, these were women of means. They were, you know, most of them are the wives of where the means came from. But the one that did raise her hand was a business owner and she was single. So it was like, okay, this is a huge issue. Right. And so it's a huge issue for women that have means.
Absolutely.
As well as those that don't have means.
Absolutely. 100%. 100%. I mean, it's an issue for all women. All women, this is an issue. You know, what I tell women, my biggest takeaway for all women is the man ain't the plan. Whether that's young women, 18-year-old women, 16-year-old women, all the way up to seniors. You know, the man ain't the plan. We got to have a plan, ladies, that is all our own. And especially for older women, women over 50, which I'm over 50 and I don't feel like I should qualify for the term older, but it is what it is. You know, women over 50 are suffering more in divorce than younger women, but the man can't be the plan. And so we have to have a plan of our own. And if you find yourself that you're in a marriage and you think that the sand is shifting under your feet, like, we got to get a plan quickly. So whether it's, you know, getting your real estate license, I mean, in most states, those are relatively easy to get, like the barrier to entry is small, whether it's, you know, some other type of licensing, dental hygienist, paralegal, receptionist, respiratory therapist, you know, some of these types of jobs, they pay well, and the barrier to entry is relatively easy. So, you know, if the sands are shifting under your feet and you see some things coming, then start working on, you know, trying to make some changes, and so that you're not depending on that man to be your plan in the future if you think that's going to change.
Well, one of the stats you share with me, and I knew 50% of marriages end in divorce, but you said 65% end in second marriages and 75% third marriages.
Third marriages.
That's amazing.
Yeah, those are not good statistics. And when you think that the average length of marriage is 8 years, average, like, I've been married 18 years, so I've kicked the butt of that statistic, but
44 right here.
Exactly. But I mean, for most of these young people that are out there thinking, you know, we're getting married and we're going to stay married a long time, I mean, averages is 8. So there's a lot of them that aren't even making it 8 years. So if you're going into a marriage thinking the man is the plan, I mean, we got some talking to do.
Well, and my message for you ladies out there that maybe feel like you're in a very secure marriage, you still need to take control of your financial life, because your husband could die. And if you don't have the wherewithal, or if you're not on all the documents, you may not be able to access the bank accounts. All those things happen. Even in a death situation. So it's very important, no matter where you are in your marriage, to take control of your own financial life, because your credit score is not the same as your husband's.
Absolutely.
And so many women don't focus on that, right?
100%. 100%. I mean, you know, whether it's getting a premarital agreement before you get married, most people think premarital agreements are a dirty conversation. They're not. You know, you have health insurance, you have life insurance, you have car insurance. A premarital agreement is just like insurance. All it does is protect the future if something bad happens. You know, if you are, you know, if you're thinking about what happens when somebody dies, get a will. You know, the number of people that pass away without a will is staggering. And when you pass away without a will, his kids from the other marriage are going to get half your stuff. And there's a whole lot of complexity that happens to your stuff, even your own stuff. Like, your house is going to be half theirs. Like, you don't want that. So make sure you have your wills in place. You know, there's all sorts of things that lawyers can do to help protect you, you know, if you just ask.
That's right. You just have to pay attention to it. And a lot of people want to put their head in the sand. So I want to just take a step back here, because you are so dedicated. You're as dedicated to this as I am to financial literacy. I see it. I see the passion in where you're talking. But I want you to talk to me about little Michelle. How did you get on this track? Tell me a little bit about little Michelle. I usually start that way, but I was so enamored with this topic, I jumped right in it.
Yeah, you and I are so in sync on our topic that it's exciting to talk to somebody like that. You know, I remember when I was about 10 years old, and the point of this story didn't really hit me until much, much later. But my father was a very philosophical guy and a very entrepreneurial guy, and so was my mother. My mother was a force of her own, very strong-willed woman. And, you know, back in the 60s, I remember we used to watch, you know, the women marching on the TV, because my mother was a little bit more of a traditionalist, but she wanted to go burn her bra. So we would watch it on TV and she would tell me all about it in the 60s and the 70s. And we would talk about the ERA and the Equal Rights Amendment and all the women that were fighting for women's rights, but she didn't have it in her to go actually do it. So we talked about it and we watched it on TV, but she was a working woman and we didn't actually go do it, but she wanted to. She burned her bra in her mind. But one day when I was about 10 years old, my mother was off doing something and my dad very seriously sat me down on the ottoman in front of him. And he's like, "Michelle, I want to have this talk with you." And the talk involved basically him telling me my mother's story. And I was 10 years old. I wanted to go watch TV. I didn't really understand it, but he told me about my mother's first marriage. And he told me that my mother had gotten married very young to this other man. And she did it to escape the abuse of her family of origin. She had been abused both sexually and physically by her brothers, and that it was a very difficult situation. And the first guy that would marry her, she up and married him and moved away out of the home with him. And this man, I'm not going to call him a gentleman, this man was a friend of her brother's. And so she married him and got out of the house at 18 years old. And it turned out he was a drunk and also very abusive. And he had beat her so badly that she had had several miscarriages. And that in order to escape the marriage with him in the 60s, you know, back then, and you know this, you know, women in the 60s didn't have a right to just go get a divorce. You had to prove things to go get a divorce. You had to prove fault or you had to prove abuse. And that was very difficult to do. And so for her to get a divorce, she basically had to escape with the clothes on her back. And my dad told me this story about how badly she was beaten, how badly she was abused. If she didn't cook a meal to his liking, he would beat her to within an inch of her life. And she would miscarry the pregnancies, multiple of them, that I would have had brothers or sisters, but for the miscarriages. And he told me about the strength that it took for her to leave him. And that, but for a girlfriend, she probably wouldn't have made it out alive. And a girlfriend helped her escape and hid her out until she could get a divorce and hide from this very abusive man. And then some months later, after the divorce, she met my father at a party. And basically, my father was this very boring, stable, had a job, you know, very, very normal, stable guy. And that's why my mother fell in love with him, because he wasn't this bad boy, drunk, exciting guy that was going to beat the tar out of her, you know. And it was important for him to tell me that story. In the moment, I didn't understand that. But then many years later, it became almost the banner under which I live. And I then, many years later, understood that because of my mother, I was raised to be a strong, independent woman. My mother never had the opportunity to get an education. My mother never had an opportunity to go to college, but it was so important to her. We were not wealthy. We were very poor growing up. And so for fun, she would take me and we would go around Gibson's grocery store and we would get a Reader's Digest out of the rack and we would read the word power going around the aisles of the grocery store. And we would both together read the words and learn the meanings of different words. And so that's how I got a good vocabulary. And that was what we would do for entertainment because we didn't have the money to go do anything. And so like through things like that, she educated me and it was important to her that she told me all the time from itty bitty to grown that I was going to college and I was getting an education. And my dad he wanted to be a lawyer. And so he told me all along, like I was going to law school. And then when I got into law school, you know, there were so many lawyers that wanted to do corporate law or, you know, all these types of law. But I never wanted to do that. I always wanted to represent real people with real problems. And then as I went through law school, I decided that, you know, the type of law that fit me was representing real people with real problems, like women who are going through divorces. And I graduated law school when I was 23 years old. And so about the only thing that would actually pay me money was family law. And so that's, I ended up doing family law and became very good at it. And so that the kind of the rest is history, but that's where little Michelle got.
I am so glad I asked you that question. What a great story.
And I was able to tell it without crying, which is probably the first time I've ever told that story without crying. So
sounds to me like there's a book in there somewhere you need
there
to
probably talk. Should be, right?
Yeah. Because, you know, it highlights why you are so passionate about what you do. You know, I love that.
I did write a book. I should have had it here in front of me, and I didn't think about it till just this minute. But I wrote a book called Wisdom from Mama that right after she passed away, she had all these like Texas sayings, like don't be cattle. In other words, don't follow the tail in front of you all the way to the hamburger factory. And so I wrote this book with like 10 of her wisdoms, more so that I wouldn't forget them over time. And like all the stories about how I remembered her in these wisdom points. And it's available on Amazon. I should have had it to hold up, but I didn't. But I wrote it more for me than for anybody else, but it's out there and available and is a fun, tiny little bathroom read. So
yeah, it's called Mama's Wisdom.
Is that Wisdom from Mama. Yeah.
Wisdom from Mama. I love that. I think that's fantastic. Yeah. So Michelle, we've been talking, we're not going to finish quite yet, but I do want to make sure people know how to find you. So why don't you share how people can find you?
Because yeah, Michelle. My website is michellemayoneal.com. And then I also have Divorce to Dynamite podcast, and that's on my YouTube channel, but you can find it all on my website, michellemayoneal.com.
I love it. I think that's fantastic. And I think, you know, as we look at what's happening in the world today, right, we're seeing women are starting to become the primary breadwinners. I mean, we're at 38-42% based on the latest stats in the household. And so what I've seen is a shifting in the dynamics, and yet the women are still the primary caregiver and the primary household manager. What do you see in that shift as it relates to the work that you do? And this is a trick question. Everybody should know I was going to ask this. So
no, I'm glad you did ask it, because I do, in what I do, I actually see a shift. Because, you know, in my law firm, we don't just represent women. We also represent men, or pretty much, you know, who pays. So, you know, so it's an interesting dynamic, because we are seeing a shift in maybe more of a team concept in a lot of families. And, you know, a lot of families are showing a little bit more progressive tendencies, where they're sharing the household responsibilities, they're sharing the family responsibilities. Men are taking more active role, especially younger couples. I'm seeing this where men are taking more of an active role in the home than the more traditional family unit kind of concept. Even in my own family, I am more the primary breadwinner. My husband is more of the nurturing soul. God bless him. He's a chef and he cooks for me, and he's so wonderful. You'll probably get to meet him when you're here. You know, so we are seeing that shift and that trend in society. And I think it's a great thing, because I think that the ideal situation for any family, for any marriage, is that everybody plays to their strengths. And that's the way it should be. That's not necessarily the way it has always been. You know, so as women are, hopefully in the future, as we go along, women take over the world. But as we are becoming more prevalent in the workforce and you know, rising in leadership in the workforce, you know, men at home do need to do their part. And I think that's just conversations that need to happen. Sometimes men just don't know what to do, and you need to train them. And
oh, that is so true. That's so true. I talk a lot about, you know, I spoiled my husband so much that I can't be mad at him for things he doesn't do because I did it all and it became a habit. So we didn't expect to have to learn.
Sure.
But
sure.
our son, he probably does most of the cooking in his house. You know, he's very much involved in the parenting side of things. Probably, you know, so they have a much more of a an equal partnership as
right.
it comes to those
results. And I think
probably
that comes
skewed
down
towards
to,
him, actually. So
I think that comes down to how moms raise their sons. I think, you know, moms need to be raising their sons to, you know, take more responsibility for themselves in the home as they are being raised, learn to do their laundry, learn to cook, you know. And it's interesting, just among our friend groups, it's very interesting to me how many husbands do all the cooking. So many of them do. And I love that. I love that.
Yeah, I think it's, and as you said, you're seeing more and more of it in the younger generations, but I think it's healthy from a standpoint of the future of the family and
yes,
and relationships. But I'm going to change the subject because I read a stat or a topic that you shared with me that surprised me, but not so much. And that was recent studies showing that menopause has triggered more divorces. Talk a little bit about that.
You know, I don't know if it's a new thing or if it was always there. We just are learning about it. You know, there's such a movement right now of studies of menopausal women. And you know, menopausal women have always just been cast aside and not really studied even in medicine. And so it's not surprising that now that medicine is giving some attention to us over 50 menopausal women, that also we're looking at the other things that are coming from that. So in this study that just came out, 73% of women blamed menopausal symptoms on their divorce. And that's, like for me as a divorce lawyer, when I read that, I'm like, I was shocked, but then I was like, that makes sense. Symptoms of depression, anxiety, rage, disturbed sleep, painful sex. Well, no kidding. Those are all things that are precursors to problems in a marriage. You know, when you have 95% of women going through menopause having painful sex or physical symptoms that are affecting their ability to have sex. Well, no kidding. Your sex life is affected. You don't want to have sex. You lose interest in it because it's painful. So then if sex is painful, you don't want to do it, you know, then what happens next? Well, he may go looking for it somewhere else. He may go find a younger model that is more interested in it. And then what happens next? Well, adultery and then leading to divorce. So it makes sense. The what do you do about it is the next question. And that's where I think these doctors that are doing so much research on what to do about menopause and what to do about these symptoms and hormone therapy, estrogen therapy that can fix some of these things. I think that's so important for women. And there's all these doctors on Instagram that this is their everyday conversation about estrogen therapy for perimenopausal women all the way down to age 35. Like women in their 30s need to be having these conversations to start preventing the impact of perimenopause all the way to menopause so that then they're not having all these symptoms that then affect every aspect of your life, including your marriage.
Well, it goes back to when you're talking about when people are in high state of emotion, you know, it's a hard time to grasp reality and do the business side. I always talk about high emotion is low intelligence.
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, the pundits out there say don't make any critical decisions 6 months after a death and or divorce, right? Because you are in that high emotional state. And that's what menopause does. Menopause create you. You don't know why your body's doing what it's doing. That your emotions are all over the place. So I think that's a critical issue for women to be aware of and realize the impact that it has, not just on themselves, but their whole family, not just spouses, but their children too.
And,
you know, because
right,
all of a sudden moms turn into this crazy person, you know, and you have to you have to deal with that. So.
And I think husbands and families all can be educated on the effects of menopause on women. And I just think our society has not been educated. Our doctors even have not been educated on the effects of menopause on women.
And the other topic that came up in our conversation, and it was related to your mom, but I think it's really important. If you're watching or listening to this and you yourself are in a situation where you feel like you're trapped, where you're being abused, whether it be emotionally or sexually, what advice, Michelle, do you give them from a standpoint of resources that they could have?
Yeah, I mean, there's plenty of resources out there. There are hotlines, there's women's shelters, there's police, there's all sorts of resources. You know, if you're even just sitting on Google, there's ways to hide your Google search so that it can't be tracked. You can go to the library. Just take your children and go to the library. You can do searches at the library that can't be tracked. You can talk to people at any number of places like libraries or, you know, any place that you can find a police officer about domestic violence. You know, if you're at the doctor's office, just getting your, you know, your annual exams, you can talk to your doctor about, you know, what your situation is, and they are trained to help women get out of those situations. So
yeah, there's and you're not alone. You're not the only one going through it. But what happens is people tend to try and think this is only happening to me, and somehow I deserve it, or I made it happen. And you're not alone, and there are people out there waiting to help.
And you don't deserve it.
That's
you
right.
don't deserve it. No,
right.
Ma'am. No,
yeah.
Ma'am.
I love that. I don't want to end on that. So let's end with what advice you give to women, no matter where you are in your marriage, no matter where, even if you're single, what advice do you give to women to find their own power and stand in their own power?
Yeah, you know, 100%, you got to look yourself in the mirror every day and tell yourself who you are. You got to believe in yourself. You know, we all are put here for a reason. We all have purpose. You have meaning. So look yourself in the mirror and tell yourself who you are and figure that out, because God did not put you here for a man to be your plan.
I love that. For years, I've always said a man is not a plan when it comes to finances. So I love that we're both singing the same song from two different background experiences.
We share a brain, Sharon Lecter.
I love it. I love it. So you're going to hang out with me. We're going to do another recording for the private Facebook group, the Play Big Movement. But so all of you watching and listening, rewind this. Oh my gosh, what an incredible podcast of great wisdom, but more important, great heart and care. You can tell she's very passionate about what she does. And so, Michelle, thank you so much for being with me.
Thank you.
And if you are not part of the private Facebook group, I suggest you join it so that you can hear the rest of the story with Michelle. But otherwise, you know, the Play Big Movement is all about being number one in your field, living your legacy, and creating maximum impact. So join us there to hear the rest of the story. Share this with your friends. If you have female friends out there that are struggling, that you think might need to have this, just share it and say you found value in it so that you can help them help themselves. So otherwise, thank you. You're fabulous. Have a great day. Thank you for listening to this segment of the Play Big Movement podcast. Take care. Thank you for listening to this segment of the Play Big Movement podcast. Please subscribe to iTunes and leave us a review, as well as join us in other areas of social media, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn at Sharon Lecter, and for Facebook, author Sharon Lecter. Thank you so much and have a fabulous day.